The hotter it gets this summer, and I'm referring to both the temperature and the climate of the Canadian election, the more likely we are to discuss climate policy. In very broad strokes, because nobody has a perfect record here, one side thinks that running against a carbon tax is a winning message, because everyone hates tax, while the other side wants to put a price on pollution, which sounds very green. So, great, campaign messaging, applause lines, policy designed to slightly and gradually lower emissions so that we can all feel a little bit better when it's too hot to go outside and we break some more hottest year ever records. Good times. What would it really take for government policy to come in line with the consensus of the scientific community? What would a climate change approach based on real data look like? One aimed at making the kind of difference that the smart people who are getting really freaked out would approve of. Can that happen? And is any party in Canada even close? Are we, I guess I'm asking, going to spend the next 6 months before the election debating who has arranged the deck chairs on the Titanic in the most interesting pattern? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story, and this is an episode suggested to us by a listener, Diana, who really wanted to know where all the parties stood on climate change and if any of them were in line with science. So we will ask, and we will ask Mike D'Souza, the managing editor of The National Observer, an expert on climate and energy policy. I want to start by asking you just how much of our climate policy in general in this country is in alignment with what scientists have to say.
I don't think any of it is, quite frankly. There are some proposals and discussions on the table. The federal government does have a suite of different policies it's introduced. But I think it's clear that all the projections show that Canada won't meet right now, is not on track or on pace to hit the targets, international commitments it has made. And even if it does meet those international commitments, scientists have looked at all of the suite of commitments that were made under the Paris Agreement in 2015. And scientists say that even these, like all the countries combined, what they have put on the table isn't enough. So the commitments that we have made as a country, scientists would say that they need to be dramatically scaled up. And the same goes for a lot of other countries that are, like Canada, among the top 10 greenhouse gas producing countries in the world. So, you know, a key part of this does depend on countries, giants like India, China, and the United States. But Canada does have a significant role to play. And so far, I think you could look back to the 1990s or 1980s to show that successive governments in Canada have failed in doing this.
Well, this topic actually came from a listener named Diana, who wrote basically because there's an election coming up, and I think beyond the carbon tax, a lot of Canadians don't have any clear idea where the major parties actually stand on climate. I will ask you about the individual parties, but first I kind of wanted to ask you how much daylight is there between all the major parties, given the scale of what we're not doing? How far apart are their policies?
Well, I think there's significant gaps from the different parties. And as we head into the election, I think it's important to point out that none of the three opposition or major opposition parties, the Conservatives, the New Democrats, and the Greens, you know, thus far, they haven't unveiled their election platforms yet, as far as I've
right.
seen. So, I mean, I would expect that some of these concrete policy proposals are going to come. Thus far, you know, some of these parties have indicated what direction they're heading in and what sort of action is required, some perhaps more so than others. But yeah, we're not in a position yet to evaluate all of the parties in what they've done, with the exception of the governing party, which is in power. It has introduced a suite of different policies. It does go beyond carbon pricing or the carbon tax. I mean, there are other things that the federal Liberals in government have proposed to do, including a suite of different, you know, regulatory efforts. There's regulations that they have amended or updated for phasing out carbon pollution from coal-fired power plants. There are proposals on the table to regulate methane emissions to better track and regulate and reduce methane emissions from oil and gas operations, which is a significant component of what targets Canada has committed to achieving. And as well, there's a clean fuel standard that's on the table. Again, it's a regulatory measure that sets a new standard for how clean fuels have to be for the producer of these fuels if they want to continue producing and selling it as a fuel. So whether it be oil or gasoline or different blends of gasoline, there are rules on the table there. So all of these suite of things, and you know, and they've also introduced different incentives or plans to encourage different clean technologies, whether they be, you know, we saw in the budget that the finance minister has proposed new incentives countrywide for the purchase of electric vehicles. There are also incentives for green businesses to encourage, for example, retrofits, home energy retrofits. You know, some of these are longstanding policies. Some of these are being modified. Some of them are being expanded. But there is certainly a suite of policies that the federal government under the Trudeau Liberals, there are a suite of policies that they have introduced.
See, that sounds like a ton of stuff, and yet, by scientific evidence, it's not going to make much of a dent. What would it look like were they to actually follow what the scientists would recommend?
Well, I think it's, you know, since the late 80s or early 90s, I think, you know, policymakers, people in government have indicated when they've looked at the science, if you go back to, you know, one of the environment ministers under Mulroney in the 1980s, Lucien Bouchard, who of course is known for other things, but you know, he was one of the first Canadian politicians to say that we need dramatic changes to our lifestyle. The way that we live now has to change. So, you know, people have to accept that how they get around, if they're commuting to work or used to commuting to work in a car, this is one thing that could change. I mean, people in terms of their habits or how they're living, they might need to find different ways to live closer to their place of work, closer to the services they need. The phenomenon of urban sprawl is one thing that potentially could change. How we heat our homes, the type of energy we're using. People have to make certain sacrifices if they're used to certain luxuries. So I think this is all, these are all elements that perhaps are not as well communicated by politicians as they should be, so that people understand what is required, the scale of action. And industry has a significant role as well in terms of the different models that have worked up till now that have helped certain industries grow dramatically. This way of doing business in Canada and in other parts of the world, it has to change, like a dependence on fossil fuels. The scientists would say that this future cannot really be possible based on the existing technologies that we have today and based on what we know of the science, we can't keep burning fossil fuels in the same way.
How do you sell that in an election year when over the past couple of years, even carbon pricing has been met with pretty stiff resistance from a lot of the provincial governments? You know, the federal Liberals are obviously going to be in a dogfight. And how can you use climate policy to advance what we need to do, but at the same time, turn it into an issue that could actually get you votes when it's going to cause short-term pain?
You know, I mean, in terms of the majority of Canadians, I think do accept this majority is fragmented among different parties that propose slightly different approaches to how to tackle this, or the scale of how far the government needs to go, whether you're looking at the Liberals, the New Democrats, or the Green Party, or even the Bloc Québécois in Quebec. And you know, I don't know what their strength will be in this next election. Then on the other side, you have mainly the federal Conservatives that have also accepted and agreed that action needs to be taken. They've kind of taken the direction of suggesting that it should all be done through regulatory means, which again will cost money. I mean, they did it in the past in terms of introducing regulations. It was the Conservative government under Stephen Harper that introduced regulations to cap pollution from coal, or started Canada on phasing out coal. I guess we could say also the Liberal government of McGuinty in Ontario started that ball rolling. But, you know, every party kind of has proposed different policies that will hurt the average person in different ways and hurt the economy in different ways, whether it's through regulation or carbon pricing. And what we're seeing now, I mean, the Liberals, their strategy, it's not for me to say whether it's right or wrong,
right,
but their political strategy right now is to focus on, you know, what they describe as carbon rebates. And, you know, we're in tax season right now, and for people filing out their tax returns in those provinces that are opposed, as you mentioned, Jordan, provinces like Ontario, Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, and potentially Manitoba as well. We will see in about a month's time whether Alberta will join them. But for provinces that are opposed, people now, when they're filling out their tax returns, they have this box they can check for carbon rebate, which will give them a certain amount of money. I think if it's a family of four, they could get up to $300. Otherwise, it might be about $100 per person in a rebate that you can get. So this is what the Liberal government is selling right now, saying that, you know, we're going to put a price on pollution for everyone and offer you this rebate. And if you do change your habits, if you avoid the activity that triggers that carbon pricing, well, then you can get the rebate and you also save money by using, you know, different forms of energy or different habits or different products that are cheaper because their carbon footprint or environmental footprint is lower.
What does the scientific community think of carbon pricing beyond the fact that, you know, obviously other things are needed, but just in general as a strategy? Do they think it works?
I wouldn't say if I'm not sure if the scientific community has taken a specific stance. I mean, certainly, I think among economists, like in that field of study,
right?
I would say that there seems to be a majority, if not a consensus, among economists that this would be the best way. This would be the most efficient way to send a market signal. You know, with models such as cap and trade, this can also work with the market setting it, but it does require a lot of different rules and different moving parts to make sure that kind of a policy is effective. With a simple carbon tax, it's much cleaner, if you can pardon the pun, because you're just imposing a simple tax on a product. And it's easier to manage and implement and then collect and follow up on. It's kind of, you know, ironically similar to, I mean, I remember election campaigns from the early 2000s or late 90s when you had different politicians, particularly from Western Canada, who were proposing flat taxes. And it's kind of interesting that a carbon tax actually is a flat tax. So it technically should benefit the wealthier more than the people with lower incomes, because, you know, as a consumption tax, someone who has a larger salary can afford to pay it more, and so it's an equal tax that everyone pays the same way. The way to get around that is through, of course, these sort of rebate programs that can be designed to offer greater rebates to people of lower income, which is what was done also with the GST when that was introduced. There's a GST rebate that people, or HST rebate that people can apply for, and depending on their level of income, they can get the refund. So carbon pricing is kind of, you know, it is a simple solution, and yeah, economists would say that this is a powerful tool to move the market in the direction that it needs to go. In terms of what scientists would say, I mean, they can evaluate different economic models.
Okay.
And look at what level of carbon taxation will lead to what sort of behavior change. And I think, you know, combined, if you look at, you know, when scientists work with economists,
they would probably agree on different levels where a carbon tax could be more effective. I think at the current level that the Liberal government has introduced it at, it certainly isn't going to change behavior that much in the first year, but it has been designed to increase gradually over time. You know, there was a Conservative leadership candidate last year or 2 years ago during the leadership race, Michael Chong.
Yes.
He had proposed carbon pricing or a carbon tax, and he had proposed having it at a level that's much higher than what is currently proposed in this first year by the Trudeau Liberals. So, you know, he is saying, yes, we need a carbon tax, but it needs to be much higher than what is currently proposed in order for it to be effective.
Is there anything you've seen out there that isn't currently on either the Liberals' list or somebody else's, but that you've seen either talked about or implemented in other countries that you think might be interesting to try in Canada?
Well, I think, you know, there's this debate that's underway now, Jordan, in the U.S. about what is being called the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And I think that this debate or discussion, it is starting to be talked about in Canada. And, I mean, the concept here is that, yeah, there are politicians that agree that there are significant large-scale changes that need to happen in the economy, and in order for these policies to be accepted, in order for the population to go along and not get angry, I mean, you have to make sure that we aren't throwing tens of thousands of people out of work, which has been a particular problem due to what has been happening in Western Canada with the oil industry there, because particularly in Alberta, the oil in Alberta from the oil sands, it is heavy oil. It's at the higher end in terms of the environmental footprint, and markets are slowly moving away from products that are higher that have a higher environmental impact, that also have a higher cost of producing. And so they are already seeing there that the market is moving away and people are being thrown out of work, and they're not seeing any alternatives, so they're getting angry. So a discussion about having a just transition is the expression that's used, which I think fits into a Green New Deal, is something that hasn't been adequately discussed in Canada to date, as far as I have observed. Now, the federal government, and you might have seen in the budget, they're addressing a just transition in terms of what's happening in the coal industry.
Yeah.
And they did consult with a panel of experts, a task force, that gave them some recommendations, some of which they've started to implement or propose as part of what was in the Morneau budget. I find it interesting that the government has introduced this, has agreed this is a serious issue, and for some reason they're just not talking at all about a just transition for oil and gas workers. So if in that region any government wants tens of thousands of workers, particularly workers that are making six-figure salaries, if you want to get them to go along with a future in which those jobs don't exist anymore, well, there needs to be some kind of discussion about how to transition these workers into industries where they can make a living and survive, make a comparable living, and be successful.
How much of an issue do you think climate policy will be in this coming election? Do you think it'll be one of the main things we're discussing?
I think so. Like, I think a comparable election in 2008, there was an election about carbon pricing. You know, in that case, again, a majority of Canadian supported parties, well, actually all the parties at the time had different forms of carbon pricing in their policies, including the Conservatives, who at the time supported cap and trade and were proposing to move forward with this as a climate solution. This time, you know, it's certainly clear that Conservative politicians seem intent on making carbon tax the main issue of debate. It's a main issue of debate in Alberta right now in the Alberta election, where I believe that Jason Kenney has said that if elected, his first act will be a legislation to repeal Alberta's carbon tax. So I think that conservative politicians will make carbon pricing a main issue in the election campaign. And I think, you know, the Liberals are certainly prepared and comfortable to fight an election campaign on this issue, framing it around the costs of not taking action, of climate change impacts, of what scientists say we need to do. And I think there will be parties like the NDP and the Greens who will say even what the Liberals are proposing is not enough. So hold on to your hat or hold on to your seats, whatever the expression is. It's going to be a significant issue. And yeah, I guess without proportional representation, there is a possibility right now that the Conservatives could be elected, and we will see if, as we get closer to the election, they have any concrete proposals on climate change. And they could make it interesting if they do, if they can demonstrate that there is a way to take action in a better way for the economy. You know, certainly, you know, this is, I'm very interested to hear what this is. But from experience, the Tories under Doug Ford in Ontario didn't really have much of a climate policy to propose apart from just saying what they wouldn't do. You know, so I'm not certain whether the federal Conservatives, seeing that formula actually worked and allowed Conservatives to get elected in Ontario, maybe they might be inclined not to do anything more if the population isn't going to really demand more. You know, there are proposals on the table that where everyone is proposing carbon pricing of certain forms, and unfortunately there is some rhetoric, political rhetoric that, you know, as journalists we're going to be careful about deciphering and calling out if a political party is denouncing a carbon tax, but on you know, with their right hand, but with their left hand, they're actually proposing a carbon tax. So, you know, all these issues will be discussed, I think, in the coming months.
Mike D'Souza, managing editor of the National Observer. For more from us, head on over to thebigstorypodcast.ca. We have basically an entire section of disastrous climate episodes if you ever feel like being really cheery. And you can tell us how you feel on social media at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter, and at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. Like the page, you'll get all our new episodes. Or you could just subscribe wherever you get podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Curl, which is a podcast app, I am told. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.